folks. Welcome back. Happy Friday. And hey, today we have to say it, 419. And I wish I could say that Tim Kern was going to be here this morning, because literally that's the phrase that he popularized years ago when we first knew each other as talk show hosts on another network. But if you have not heard the term, 419, of course, is the date. It's April the 19th, and it represents a date that literally, I guess you could say, no, it doesn't live in infamy, but it certainly represents a cusp throughout human history, especially over the last century or so, that has to do with both liberty and tyranny. Most importantly and famously, 419, before we became politically correct, was known as Patriot's Day. This was the day of the shot heard around the world. Crispus Attucks took one for the team at Lexington and Concord Green, and of course that began the War for Independence, a.k.a. the Revolutionary War, and it's a dramatic date, a turning point in human history. Years later, there were a number of other things that happened on that date. Tim pointed out when I did talk to him this morning, and he was able to tell me he's not going to be able to be here, that it also represented the first act of the Civil War. Lincoln's blockade of the southern ports began on April the 19th. And, of course, years later still, during World War II, the Nazis made the final attack on the Warsaw Ghetto, part of the final solution, on 419. And most importantly and more recently, we had two major attacks on American, constitutional values and liberty. You have the final solution by the Clinton regime and the evil Menachemo Janet Reno, who executed a whole bunch of men, women, and children in their church in Waco, Texas, and then covered up that masterfully with the help of some people who are still involved in Big Brother. And then finally, of course, just a couple of years later, on the very same day, a lot of evidence was destroyed along with a lot of children in Oklahoma City when the Murrah Building was blown up. And guess what? We now have uncontrovertible evidence that the truck bomb of Tim McVeigh had not a whole lot to do with it other than being the focus of the cover-up. General Ben Parton, unfortunately the late General Ben Parton, who I had the privilege to meet and interview any number of times, pointed out and did some great articles. By the way, they've mostly been expunged from the web at this point, at least his photographic evidence, showing that there's no way on God's green earth that a single truck bomb even could have remotely done the damage. Clearly, and as a forensic expert, he pointed out, it was contact explosives around the steel-reinforced columns that supported the building. So lots of things happened on 419, and Tim has long suggested it needs to be a greeting, indicating that we understand that this battle for liberty and tyranny continues. And, of course, given all the other things that are coming together this year, it's certainly a day to keep in mind and pay attention. All right, well, with all that on the table, I'll say good morning, Jeff, because he's here with us in Costa Rica, and 419.
Yes. Well, you covered all the high spots. I mean, the spot that I was going to really focus on as far as today that remembers the past was the Warsaw Ghetto. You know, it's because it was also in that year on the eve of Passover, which is this year is as well. And, you know, that was a very, very dark day for humanity, you know, not just because they were Jews, but because humanity did this and allowed it to happen. We can think of many things that have happened since then and before then that are equally as atrocious that humanity has done to itself.
Well, yeah.
And as I've mentioned several times in the last couple of months, we've now, gone so far as to incorporate stellar level technology, sun rays, to basically destroy humanity at a whole new level. We've gone from cutting each other with sharpened rocks to now melting them with the power of the sun in our very hands, and everybody thinks that we're becoming better. I just don't get it. Anyhow, Mark.
Okay. Well, before we go on, yeah, and I have to add, and 5G coming to a theater near you will provide all kinds of death that people won't even recognize as they lay awake during sleepless nights, wondering how come they're so amenable to being controlled. So a lot of that stuff technologically. But before you move too far from the Waco Ghetto, I wanted to make one other quick point on that one. Of course. Oops, Freudian slip. Warsaw Ghetto. The 419 date was the end of the situation, but the uprising began, as most folks are aware, but the Waystream Press isn't about to tell you, when some disarmed Jews trapped in the Warsaw Ghetto managed to get a hold of a firearm from one of their German captors. And with that firearm, they were able to obtain more firearms, and they held off the combined German forces for quite a while before that final solution. And at least anecdotally, and this is one of those disputed quotes, I'll admit, but it certainly makes sense given what else we know the man said. Adolf Hitler was reported to have said, "Hey, this just goes to show you what happens when Jews manage to get a hold of firearms." And of course, that's true still. When any of us manage to be able to keep liberty teeth to defend ourselves from the likes of the tyrants who are trying to disarm folks still. And by the way, if you recall, the shot heard around the world was fired because what were the British troops coming to do? Yeah, they were coming to take the powder and ball at Lexington and Concord Green. In other words, they were coming to do the gun control thing.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, an unarmed people is a people easy to be overcome. Slaves. So basically, today, yes, exactly. Today is just another day that we can tack up as a day that lives in infamy. But you're right. A lot of things seem to happen on this day. Anyhow, right. So talking about the things that are happening today, the list is long and varied.
But there's a common thread still. Oh, well, okay. I was going to say, do we do this chronologically or in the degree of media hysteria? If it's media hysteria we're talking about, well, that one's obvious, and I think we should come back to that, although we won't spend a whole lot of time on it. Earlier in the week, there was an interesting and, well, let's just say, certainly suspicious event. After 900 years of basically standing and repelling fires and invaders, even Hitler, as one of the people who isn't buying the official line pointed out, even Hitler didn't try to destroy Notre Dame. But that's not true for the invaders in Europe. Oops, can I say that? Well, not on Fox. They'll cut you off. But this story, at least, is important and isn't getting reported. Early unconfirmed reports, said J.D. Hayes for Natural News, indicate that the Notre Dame fire, I'm sure everybody's heard about that, was arson. It was intentional. It was terrorism. Is, they ask, this part of the ongoing war by Islam on, well, Judeo-Christianity, either Christianity or the Bible, take your pick. As you know, in the early part of the week, Notre Dame, built in the mid to latter 1100s, took over 100 years to put the thing together, nearly burned to the ground. The official narrative is that it had something to do with renovation work, although lots of folks have denied that it possibly could have. Now they're saying, as of I heard the story just a minute ago, oh, it must have been an electrical fire. Well, it was some kind of a fire anyway. And this was what was shut down. I'm looking at a report first from Paul Joseph Watson via Time columnist Christopher J. Hale, who tweeted on Monday around noon that, quote, a Jesuit friend in Paris who works at Notre Dame told me the cathedral staff are saying the fire was intentionally set. It got up a lot of attention, and of course Watson was quick to note that Hale was forced, or at least managed, to delete the tweet. The 800-pound elephant in the room, though, say all the other stories that aren't getting reported, is that France's Muslim population has soared. It's now perhaps the highest per capita in Europe, and anti-Christian attacks in particular, anti-Jewish attacks as well, are on the rise in France. Some folks are saying there are about two desecrations and or burnings and or incidents a week in France. Jewish attacks, attacks against Jewish symbols have risen by 74%. And there were multiple attacks, including a well-known major cathedral not too far from Notre Dame during the same or previous weeks. There was a fellow on Shepard Smith who was cut off, a French elected official who dared to question the PC version of the narrative. He tried to bring up that Christian churches throughout his country are being desecrated at an alarmingly high rate, weekly or more. And he made some of the points that I've just outlined, and Shepard Smith cut him off. Not on my watch. So I'll ask it this way, Jeff. Do we know what happened here? Absolutely not. Should we be suspicious? Clearly. Obviously. Because the pattern is undeniable to anybody except one who's on the payroll of the deep state. But do we know? Certainly not. Are we likely to know after the investigation is complete? I seriously doubt it. Go ahead.
Well, eventually we will. I mean, you know, we find out stuff all the time.
Oh, we'll hear it, but it'll be like Hitler's emails. Officially, they don't exist, and officially, they've been destroyed.
Right. I mean, honestly, the reports I saw was there's 300 and something other churches or buildings that were religiously affiliated that have been attacked across France, and I don't know what the time frame was for that. So, you know, there does seem to be quite a lot of evidence showing reasonability of the accusation that it was arson and it would have been by the immigrants. But I don't think we'll ever know.
But here's the key.
I mean, we still don't know what happened with McVeigh, right?
Well, we know what happened. Actually, there were multiple bombs. We don't know who was responsible for it. We know that the BATF was tipped off, and that a lot of people didn't show up for work that day, and that there was a huge effort to cover up, and they brought in officers. In other words, there was an incredible cover up of something that stank to high heaven. And the one thing we know for sure, and this is high school physics at best, is that the official narrative, a single lone truck bomber in this case, is an absolute bald-faced lie. It simply violates the laws of physics. Have we heard the story in all the intervening years? Well, yes, but not from Big Brother. We heard it from the likes of the late General Ben Parton and so many others. And you'll note to this day, you will not see the video that the FBI had from neighboring buildings. You will not see an aerial photo. It's verboten, because the aerial photo would show that the hole from McVeigh's little teeny truck bomb doesn't line up with the damage to the building, and so forth. And I don't think we're going to get an official truth out of France, but we very well may already know what happened there.
The key
is this, Jeff. I started to say this. The press isn't going to allow people to even to discuss the possibility. Fox News, for crying out loud, was shutting people down for even suggesting that there ought to be suspicions raised. That's that's criminally negligent journalism. We'd expect it from some other network.
Well, yeah, and who's pulling the strings on that is open to be talked about for sure. But as far as Notre Dame as far as that story goes, you know, if it was terrorists, then all they did was show the unbelievably inappropriate view of wealth is in humanity today. The amount of money that has poured in to restore this old building, this old icon, in literally in the face of the poor that are living in the streets around it. You know, it's, I don't know. I just think that humanity has really come to a place that we have just never. We're in uncharted waters, as far as our.
All right. Well, I will disagree in part. I mean, in theory, at least, and given that France is a socialist country, this isn't true. But in theory, if people have money and they want to spend it on what they want, that ought to be their prerogative.
That, of course, is
not going to happen anymore. But I think the bigger issue here is if what looks like is obviously the case is in fact true, whether or not it gets reported. There is a war going on against everything that once, in fact, was called Western civilization. Attribute it to what you want, right? Whether the Catholic Church is a good thing or a bad thing in balance. Lots of areas, of course, where it's right to be critical, and I'm certainly critical of a lot of the stuff that they do to Scripture and other things. Nevertheless, it's being overturned. And what elements of history were there and were good and were worthy and were worth preserving are being systematically destroyed as the entire European continent is being invaded. Oh, and they're doing it here as well. And we're seeing that.
Well, yeah, it's a clash of morality. That's really what we're dealing with. You know, we have cultures in the world that have completely different morality than what we consider morality.
Well,
just because we hold our morality as sacred, we feel that our morality overrules theirs. I think there's a basic humanism to morality that we need to all agree upon, and so far that discussion seems to be, you know, back burner at best.
I'm not sure if I agree or disagree with the way you phrase that. However, I will say this: there is a superior morality. And it, in fact, is the scriptural morality, and it's based on certain instructions that haven't changed. Thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. Unless, of course, what we find out now, you're part of Big Brother, in which case you can do all of those things with impunity. And therein lies the rub. And we're seeing an alternative morality, and I'm going to put that in great big quotes, that says, no, do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. You got a guy that's has no experience of anything except being a socialist mayor, and I don't even want to give him the name, but I suspect he'll be the nominee because he checks some of the right boxes. He is a gay nutcase. And he basically says, God made me this way. And I've heard thieves say it. God made me this way, so I get to steal because that's the way he made me. There's something wrong there, Jeff. And it flies in the face of what history suggests is an appropriate way to build a society. Yes, it's not like we have been perfect and there haven't been problems. But we're seeing a whole lot of stuff coming into play, which is antithetical. Now, the comment I've made for years is, you can go through Scripture, you can read the Torah, and you can say, what does the creator of the universe say ought to be done? Turn it upside down, and that's what Big Brother's going to mandate. Whether it's a man lying with a man as with a woman, or dishonest weights and measures, or you name it. If it's evil so far as the book is concerned, they'll say, if you want to get a job, if you want to keep a job, if you want to survive in what we're building, you better turn it on its head.
Well, you know, the word that keeps coming in my head is a moral morass. We basically, you know, you are describing what is normally described in our culture, in the Western culture, as this typical point in our history where we achieved a moral foundation that you agree with, and again, I'm not talking about you specifically, but just as a general in our society, in our Western society, and at that point, we consider anything that is past that is a degradation of a moral standard, and that everybody has a different opinion about moral standard sits.
We got lots to talk about.
But we bring in, these other nations and these other the Koreans and Chinese and so forth. They do not share a moral standard that the Americans share or that the Western culture shares. And when you see them come into these cultures, you see a moral morass begin, and it becomes a swamp. And we're seeing the outcome of that today. And that's kind of so. What you're arguing, I agree with. What you're attributing to, I'm not sure about. But go ahead.
Well, the only thing I would add, and then I think we got lots of other things to talk about, but it's simply that if you compare economic, for example, results and ask, you and I both grew up, Jeff, in a nation where because there were lots of people with guns and lots of honest people and lots of people that shared a, if you will, Judeo-Christian morality, they believed in the Ten Commandments, even if they disagreed about the Sabbath day and other things. We could leave our doors unlocked. We didn't have to worry about petty theft. We didn't have to worry about our children who could walk to school and they weren't being miseducated.
Well, it depends on where you lived.
Well, yeah.
It depends on where you live.
In most of the country, especially in most of the South. In other words, in most of the places where that now frowned upon morality existed, people were free. And in fact, you could build a good life. A husband could bring home enough to provide for a family. And we had one of the most productive, one of the freest, and most economically upwardly mobile societies in all of human history. Huge breakthroughs in science and technology and all kinds of things were made. And as we have turned away from that, lots of stuff has been turned on its head and upside down.
Right. And Mark, all of that happened after we went to unlawful weights and measures internally,
hardly.
Because our parents' generation and our generation, I believe, were the pinnacle or are the pinnacle of the American dream. And Now I think we're going downhill.
Well,
so
yeah,
I agree with you on that.
The only place where I would say, okay, here we're going to disagree. As an engineer, I look at lag. If it takes a long time, if it takes a century, in other words, for the effects of evil to play out, people aren't going to be able to ascertain what's going on. As a matter of fact, I encourage people, read Ecclesiastes 8:11. And Solomon basically said the same thing. Because the results of an evil work are not visited speedily, is what it boils down to. People can't connect cause and effect. So, yeah, you have a world that's big, and if we go socialist, you can still live on the fruits of what was built before for a long time. And, yes, we've had dishonest weights and measures. At least they started in 1913, but they didn't really come to fruition, depends on which milestone you pick, until 1965 or maybe 1971. And if you count forward 40 or 50 years from there, now we're reaping that bitter fruit. So, The problem is, yes, people that can't understand lag aren't going to be able to connect cause and effect. All right, well, let's do this. Right. Let's talk about the other big, well, maybe we ought to best still stay chronological because we'll get there. Julian Assange, we mentioned this last week. A fellow who should be getting the Pulitzer Prize is, in fact, getting the shaft. And there was a lot more information that came out this week about it. But basically, I guess that this piece from Ron Paul kind of summarizes it. Julian Assange, he wrote, political prisoner. The trouble is, we're seeing it. And this kind of goes back to what we were already talking about. People are now being imprisoned because they dare to tell the truth about their governments.
Well, yeah, that's happening all over the world, too. And, you know, we've been talking about it for years. This thing has been going on in Europe and in Russia and the Indochina.
Well, and they killed Michael Hastings.
For years, and we've been, and you and I and others have been talking about how, you know, it's happening there, it's going to happen here, and here we are. We're talking about it happening here almost as a regular occurrence now.
And it's not even being hidden, okay? When we first talked about it, Michael Hastings, I mentioned the name, you know, his engine blew up in his Mercedes, and then he was rammed into a tree, probably by a remote control, certainly by some kind of an arc inside, and yet they at least tried to cover it up. With Julian Assange, I think if they could have gotten away with executing the guy right there on the Ecuadorian embassy steps, they'd have done it.
It would be surprising to me if there wasn't a plan on the table for that.
I guarantee you, because I've been in meetings, not where they talked about killing people, but meetings where they said, okay, we got a plan for every eventuality. It's simply the way intelligent people get together and plan these things. You got it. There would be a plan A, B, C, D, and so forth.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room. And I like the phrase that the president used. I can't quite repeat it on the air. But he did pretty well nail it. He says that the Mueller report is, quote, total bull pucky, right? And he slam fabricated testimony in the report. He did prior to that say, yes, total exoneration and so forth. I saw a comic, Jeff, to my mind, that really encapsulates the whole much ado about nothing thing here. And it's a donkey and an elephant looking at a Rorschach test, which basically looks like some kind of satanic figure almost. And the elephant says, completely innocent. And the donkey says, completely guilty. And underneath the caption reads, the $25 million Rorschach test. And that pretty well nails it. $25 million to waste 2 years, undermine a president who the deep state never wanted elected anyway, and essentially make darn sure that whatever was supposed to happen didn't. Kind of like what Theresa May did with Brexit.
Well, Theresa May, Brexit. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, let's not go there. We'll come back if you want.
Yeah, because that's a whole other thing. Yeah, that's going to take us down another road.
I shouldn't have thrown that out, but it just struck me as, you betcha, people want something and they're not going to get it.
Right. You betcha.
Okay, well, so if you've got a comment, go ahead. I actually saw the best summary I've seen came from Kimberly Strassel at the Wall Street Journal. I've grown to respect her work a lot. And she said that what's in the special counsel's findings is almost but not quite as interesting and revealing as what's left out. And she wrote that basically you've got this 400-plus page report written by a guy who was too conflicted, clearly, to be allowed to do it, much less take a detached look at the Russia collusion story. She doesn't mention it. I have. It is said, and there is evidence to support it more than Mueller found with Trump, that it was, in fact, Mueller who delivered Uranium-1 yellow cake to the Kremlin on the airport ramp at Moscow. And, you know, when it comes to Russian collusion, in other words, he ought to know. But, says Strassel, the evidence of the bias now stares at us, whether it's intentional or not, through the 448 pages of the report. What the report shows is that he endured a special counsel probe that was relentlessly, at times even farcically, obsessed with taking him out. And what stands out if you read it is just how diligently and creative the legal minds assembled there work to implicate someone in Trump world on something, anything, Russia. And that takes us to the break. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second half of Drive Time Friday with your host, Mark Call, and myself, Jeff Gilbert. Tim Kearns isn't here with us again today, but he shall be with us soon. So, Mark, yeah, we had on the other side, we were actually in a discussion in the break. Let's see. Let me get back to what I was going to bring up. So
back to the fabricated Mueller report. Yes.
Yeah,
the witch
that's
hunt.
It, that's it. The witch hunt is on. You know, here's my take on this. We have probably 10 more years of this. I'm assuming it'll go through the rest of this presidency. It'll go through the next sitting of Trump, because I'm pretty sure he's going to get in again, at least at this point. And it's going to go through at least the first presidency of the next guy or girl, whatever. This is just not going to end. We're going to find out that Mueller was directly involved with Russia beforehand, that this was an
Mueller
entire
is slime. This guy is so rotten to the core, it boggles the mind.
Well, you know, I watched something. There was I have the trending tweeters. Can't even get the words out of
you. Got it right.
That come up on my phone. Trending tweets. That's the word. I get trending tweets that pop on my phone. One of the things that I saw this week, which I thought was really interesting, is it was a fluid graphic that showed the polarization from the late 1800s until now of Congress, and how we are now the most polarized and the most I guess polarized is probably the best way to put it, as we've ever been as far as our voting records go. And I really believe that what we're seeing with this Trump thing is just like what we saw with Obama, and just like we saw before that, you know, just the last couple of presidencies, where people hate the other party so bad that they will take every single flaw and every single wart or blemish and dance upon it until they can find some reason to exist. I don't think we've ever been like that in the history of America.
I'll give you that. I don't think we've ever seen the counterpolarization. I've suggested for quite a while now that the intent is to create a civil war and to destroy. And if you can't do it from within via the deep state, let's open the floodgates and bring in the invaders from the south. So all of that, to my mind, seems pretty clear. But where I would at least in part disagree is that it's polarized explicitly on party. Because a lot of the rhinos in Trump's own party hate the guy, too. They call themselves never-Trumpers, even. And the real issue, I think, with Trump, whether it's true or not is another story, is that he was an outsider, and at least the impression we got is that he wasn't supposed to win. He was elected on a platform of lock her up and bring some rule of law back into the deep state swamp. And when he tried, or at least he appeared to try, whether he was ever sincere, we don't know, you know what? Hit the fan. And that's essentially what we're still seeing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but still, I mean, again, who is driving this polarization, or whether or not it's just because that's who we are? I don't know. But we are at the place now where we are, I believe, more polarized than we've ever been. Even I don't even think the Civil War was as polarized as we are right now. Maybe it is. You know, I don't know. I'd have to do a lot more work on that. But
of course,
what we are today is not good.
If we understand the real causes of the Civil War, it had a lot more to do with mercantilism and tariffs on the South, and whether or not they can sell their flax and cotton and other agricultural products to Britain and France, who wanted them. Than it certainly did with slavery. Slavery was a political thing that was added by Lincoln, and of course everybody that's paid attention knows he didn't free a single slave in the North, and Ulysses S. Grant was the last U.S. president in the North to own slaves afterwards. So what most Americans know about the Civil War, you know, that just ain't true, would fill lots of books. Comment about the Mueller report.
It's complicated. It's complicated is the answer, and normally the answer people give is a very, very, very simplification, very much a simplification of what is still being studied today and is still being argued over today.
And it's intended to cover up the truth. I mean, the honest truth is, if you read the Constitution, the South was in fact right. They did have a right to withdraw from what became after Lincoln a roach motel, right? Remember the old joke or the ad line, a roaches check in, they never check out. Well, the states were the same way.
They never check out.
But back
well,
to
yeah, states' rights. I mean, that's that was so that obviously very polarized time because it was states' rights.
And we're seeing something similar today with the attempt to destroy the Second Amendment, the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, and so forth. There are those that can read what the Bill of Rights and the Constitution says, and those that say we can read it and we don't want to, and you don't find that it applies to you. And sadly, that's most of the swamp. All right, well, back to – I want to just make one or two more comments that I think Kimberly Strassel nailed when it really comes to – well, you know, in this case, remember the old line from Arthur Conan Doyle and the detective Watson and Sherlock Holmes about the dog that did not bark. And there's a dog that did not bark in this report. And what she said, though, while it wasn't Mueller's intent, the sheer quantity and the banality of the details concerning alleged, even trivial interactions between any Trump official and anybody who was Russian highlights the fact that they were random, haphazard, and peripheral. By the end of Volume 1 of the Mueller witch hunt here, we get the notion that the Trump campaign engaged in some grand plot with Russia was simply a joke. And she goes on to say, and as I was reading her comments, I couldn't help, Jeff, but think back to, I'm sure you've probably read Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, and one of my favorite lines in there is a discussion where one of the sages that she quotes says, "There's no way to rule innocent men. The only power any government has is the power to crack down on criminals. Well, when there aren't enough criminals, one makes them, or nowadays we'd say imports them. That's why we have open borders. And one declares so many things to be a crime that it becomes impossible for men to live without breaking laws. And the irony here is that either for one reason or another, they weren't able to find enough crimes to destroy a sitting president. And that speaks volumes because there are tons of potential crimes. And she even in the article makes a joke about, the pit bull, Andrew Weissman, collapsed under mountains of federal statutes looking for something, anything, to pin on Trump. But here's the rest of it. What she says is most important is what isn't in the report. It only makes a passing, bland reference to the genesis of so many of the accusations that Mueller allegedly probed, like the infamous Steele dossier and the Fusion GPS firm, paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign. How, for crying out loud, can you exonerate Mr. Page without delving into the scandalous Moscow deeds of which he was falsely accused? How do you narrate an entire section on the July 2016 Trump Tower meeting without noting that Ms. Veselnitskaya was working alongside of Fusion? How do you detail every aspect?
Why would you leave out such important, if not damning, information?
The dog did not bark.
Question asked, question answered.
Yeah, it's all about a cover-up. It treats everything, she says, in summary here. Well, here's another one. Okay, you got to do this one. Mr. Comey's firing, one of the more telling sections. Mueller's team found it was generally beyond the realm of possibility. Don't even conceive of it. That the FBI director was canned for insubordination or outright incompetence. It treats everything that FBI's Comey did as legitimate, just while it treats everything the president did as suspect. And right there, you have the dog that did not bark. It's the bottom line that really kind of tells it. That is, if people can see through the Rorschach test issue.
Right. It's you'd like to blame them for cognitive bias, but in reality, I think that's engineered, and that those who believe it and accept it as fact in the face of all reason, they're the ones that are being fed their cognitive bias, and they, buying it hook, line, and sinker. You know, it drives me crazy. I just saw an article that was a year ago, it was back in October, that Americans are too fat and too stupid to join the army nowadays.
Okay. Witness a certain New York Congress critter, the brainless one, occasional cortex, yes. I guess nowadays she could fit. She'd probably rise rapidly to the rank of colonel or so anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyhow.
Well, all right. Jeff, there's a topic that, I didn't hear you say. I'm going to go ahead and do this anyway, that I sent you a note about during the break. And this comes from Dave Hodges via other sources that I know of as well. Paul Preston, a fellow in California, the Department of Water Resources and so forth, about the biggest earthen dam, I think it's in the world, certainly within the United States, called the Oroville Dam. And there have been some real issues there lately. And as you know, and the reason why I think this is an important topic to at least point out to people, A, is because it could kill a whole lot of people, and B, because so much in California, whether we're talking about the fires or the deliberate attempt to destroy once beautiful cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles, to turn so many things communist and to literally destroy the entire farm economy there. And that's a concern that will affect the rest of the United States. Much of the vegetables for the entire U.S. come from California. And if that region is devastated and they're working hard to do it, it could have incredible effects, including famine, on the rest of the country. So why don't you tell me, without be circumspect, why it is you don't think we should weigh in on where I was headed. And then we'll see if we go through anyway.
I wasn't sure how you were going to approach it. I wasn't sure how you were going to approach it. And I'm not sure how much of the news story is hype and how much of it is based upon, you know, good science. So
okay.
I just read it, so I wasn't quite sure. But I would like to weigh in on it. So I'm glad we at least broached the subject.
Okay, well, let's just say this. Like EMP, it's a possibility, and it's a possibility that people need to pay attention to because it's real enough that if it catches people off guard, we would talk about conditional probabilities and weighted costs in an engineering analysis. In other words, if the chance of being killed by a meteorite is infinitesimal, but, you know, the damage it would do if it kills you is huge, you multiply those things together. And in the case of an EMP, the damage that an EMP strike would do, and it's at least a 30, maybe 50-50 likelihood, is so overwhelmingly incredible that it's a big deal. And in the case of the Oroville Dam here, I think a similar calculus applies. Okay, so go ahead.
Okay, so my comments on this are actually more like using this as a springboard. Just like we're talking about in France, you know, there are certain things you just don't want to include in the discussion concerning the fire, the burning down of Notre Dame. And we've talked about it on all kinds of topics over the last several years, that, you know, the government just will not discuss certain aspects of events that are in the public eye. And they hide them and allow for, you know, incredible amounts of theory and suspicion to, you know, to foment. In California, there is a suppression of information around earthquake and earth movement. Some of that suppression is to keep, you know, Los Angeles and San Francisco from being turning into, you know, insane mobs.
Too
without,
late.
You know, without. Right. Well, you know, you don't want Watts to happen again. Right. So, you know, there's a suppression of information about how the earth is moving in the Southern California region. There's a term called slow slip. It's part of the Ring of Fire. There's a term called slow slip that is basically all along the Southern California region. There's a constant movement of Earth. Well, what we're talking about with the Oroville Dam is a little bit higher than that, but the slow slip has been very erratic of lately. This constant motion has been very erratic lately, and there hasn't been any discussion about it in the news. And this erratic behavior is causing some concern in that community that goes along with it, that searches this stuff out, that this slow slip, if it doesn't keep its constant movement going, then we could see what you would consider constipation of momentum, and that the Oroville Dam at that point would be subjected to a fairly substantial earthquake.
Okay, let's pause.
And it could be something that happens with very little warning. So I agree that it's something that people need to take into account, because the Oroville Dam has had spillway damage and repair, but damage nonetheless, in a region that is very, very fluid at the moment.
Okay, so a couple things on the table. One, when I heard you say slow slip concerning California, my first thought is, well, the slow slip is into communism and it's no longer slow, but that could apply to any number of things. So for all of those reasons, you know, and you and I have a similar mindset, at least on this score, I think. I wouldn't want to live in California on a dare.
Oh, hell no.
I once enjoyed visiting there. I remember when San Francisco was a nice place. I enjoyed going to the Embarcadero and riding the trolley cars and going to Chinatown and having dinner. But nowadays, basically, it sounds like it's a feces-ridden hellhole. And they've done that on purpose. So the problem here, Jeff, is there is a connection. If you have a major, you know, the big one in California, the Oroville Dam would probably just be one of many things that would add to the total carnage. But the reason for the discussion about Oroville Dam in particular is because it would explicitly affect Sacramento and the area downstream from the dam, one of the most fertile farming areas in the United States. And the piece that I'm looking at here from Hodges, by the way, the headline, for those who want to look it up on the Common Sense Show, is "The Collapse of the Oroville Dam Has Become a Distinct Possibility." And essentially what he says is it's a 900-foot dam. It's the biggest earthen dam in the United States, and it's experienced threats. Evidently, there was an overflow, an overtopping, they call it, that was seen by people on February the 11th of this year, leading to an evacuation by the sheriff of 190,000 people from the inundation area on the 12th. And what he goes through is a lot of technical detail with lots of pictures showing water over the spillway and so forth, and the damage to the spillway leaks. I'm not a dam expert. Hodges has talked to dam experts, and essentially kind of what you were suggesting is, no, we don't want to panic people. We don't want to tell people the truth about what's going on here, but this is, in fact, a serious issue. And the experts that Hodges, that he spoke with, said that in the event of a dam overtopping, which could then lead to a collapse, in other words, water can come over the top of the spillway, that doesn't necessarily mean it's all over, but there could be cascading effects. Were there to be a collapse, the dam water would come rushing out at 75 miles an hour, 30 foot tall, and it would take between an hour and 2 hours, the difference is immaterial, to have Sacramento inundated. And about 2 million lives are at risk. And, of course, the even bigger concern for the rest of the country is the follow-on effects from the loss of so much agricultural area and retail, oh, sure, and you name it. So it is a real threat. It's a threat that is not only real. I mean, we got lots of threats to talk about, but as I pointed out, the damage from something like this, even if we didn't get the big one that would take out the rest of California via earthquake, the damage is significant, and it's something people ought to pay attention to. I was going to jokingly say, but not really, that if Gavin Newsom and some of the other scumbags, you know, the high-profile socialists, get out of Dodge, you better pay attention. Go ahead.
You know, most of the people on the radio that listen to us won't be from where we're from, where we lived. But Thompson Valley Canyon, the big Thompson Canyon flood.
That was while, you know, I was in college. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, that was, you know, much smaller in scale. But when that flood happened, it was devastating to the community for a long time. It cost a lot of money to clean up and fix. There's just no way that region would survive
well,
that type
okay,
of impact.
Okay, so, and that's a great comment, simply, Jeff, because you and I both spent a lot of time in the Boulder area, and I've hiked, and I can't tell you how many hours I've spent in Boulder Canyon and driving up the canyon to go skiing and so forth. Boulder Canyon is one of the most flood-prone areas in the state of Colorado. But I guarantee you, come May and June, every Coloradan that had half a brain was watching Boulder Canyon, and nobody wanted to be in there on a day when we could expect a massive storm to come over. So these are very real threats. The difference is, you know, that was a single storm that could come in and do a Big Thompson or do a Boulder Canyon problem. With Oroville Dam,
right,
this is
yeah,
a continuing.
Warning.
Yeah, there's, well, this is a warning too, and it's actually even longer. It's not going to be a single storm that takes this out. It's a cascading series of effects and water going through various parts of undermining the earthen dam and the like. But the point is, people need to be paying attention in both cases, and lives are genuinely at risk. And in the case of Oroville, here's another thing, Jeff. In all of the other things we've been talking about, acts of terrorism, acts of overflowing upwards from the south that are in a lot of cases, I'd say you can't deny it. It's deliberate. The attempt to open the borders, to incite people to come in and destroy the legal, the economic, the societal foundations of what's left of the United States is real. And if you deliberately undermine a dam and you deliberately neglect its maintenance, you can almost essentially set your clock by what's being done there, too.
Well, I mean, honestly, looking at it from a tactical perspective, yes, it is a relatively intriguing target, whether or not you could be effectual in using it as a weapon of mass destruction. That remains to be seen, but definitely it seems to be a great target of opportunity based upon its current status.
Well, and the bottom line for folks that are there is just be aware of it. For those of us that aren't in the flood path downstream in the Sacramento vicinity, you know, don't go there. Stay out of there. If you're there living there, I personally would not be there. But be aware that the follow-on effects would include massive increases in food prices. Well, what does that mean? We've already been talking about it. Prepare for an eventual huge increase in the price of food, whether it's the economy that collapses or the Oroville Dam. The effect's the same. So would a big earthquake. Oh, yeah. And, you know, so would an EMP and so many other things.
Yeah, any metropolitan living arrangement that you have is going to be a bad place to be with any number of different types of things that could happen, whether they're natural or otherwise. You know, if you live in a metropolitan area, it's going to be hell.
Jeff, I'd say that applies to the whole stinking state of California. I'm sad to say that. I got a number of friends. I've enjoyed my visits there. I got a lot of people that I love that are still there. But personally, you know, it bothers me that I have people that I care about and love that are still there, because I think the risk in the People's Republic of California, and nobody even laughs at that anymore because it's true, are extreme.
Well, I mean, we have somewhat of a flavor of that in Boulder, right?
Well, we saw it, and I got out of Boulder for the same reason years ago. And it's called the People's Republic of Boulder.
I forget what that is you used to say all the time. Was the edge of reality, or you?
No,
can
no.
See
so on a clear day from Niwot, where I lived later on a clear day, you can still see reality as long as you look away from Boulder.
Right, yeah.
All right. Well, let's close with one more story. This one you may have seen because it's closer to your old stomping grounds. I've only been there once. Gatwick, where there was, of course, the famous Gatwick drone that interrupted the travel plans of some 140,000 travelers not too far from year end during the middle of the holiday rush.
Flying it.
They blamed a middle-aged couple from Crawley. Turned out that was a non-starter. And now the admission comes out that it may have been an inside job. So the Gatwick COO and operator. In other words, hey, Jeff, this will they've been lying to us. They're still lying.
Oops.
There may never even have been a drone, they were saying at one point. Oh, no, we're sorry. That was never true. There was a drone. A lot of people saw it. But it might have been an insight. Who knows what's going on? But kind of like what we've seen later on in the week, I don't think they've been telling people the truth.
Well, also, at some point, you know, the whole thing about stupidity being an option, the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing could very well be the case as well.
Yeah, you can't rule out. My favorite quote from Robert Heinlein, never underestimate the power of human stupidity. And that seems to apply on so many fronts, especially the congressional front.
Well, you know, if we had crystal balls.
Okay. Well, one last thing, I guess, if you didn't know this, the music's going to come up pretty quickly here, in the People's Republic of Colorado. Now, we're thankfully in the state, but well away from, you know, ground zero of the nutcases in Denver. But the scumbag excuse for a governor signed the red flag ERPO abomination that says, hey, you slaves, you got no rights to property, much less due process. We don't care about your Second Amendment. We don't care about your right to defend yourself. Matter of fact, we don't care about your very lives. We're going to do whatever we want, Soviet style. And if we think you'll have a gun that we don't want you to have, well, the very fact that you want it means you must be a nutcase, so now we can take it.
Well, it is one of those things where there are countries across the world who are now rearming themselves in their citizenry.
Brazil.
I think we should keep those people in mind because they are rearming themselves because it's the right thing to do.
All right. Well, the music is up. So, hey, to those that are celebrating Pesach, Passover, tonight or tomorrow, Chag Sameach, Shabbat Shalom.